In Conrad's world, filled with the blood and grit of the world that we all live in, the birth of happiness begins with the birth of language.
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone.
It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. Hi-ya! This is where it all happens. Aren't they beautiful?
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South Africa's ruling party backs contentious civil unions. A poet gives birth to a new queer aesthetic and riding the short bus to carnal knowledge. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Don Lupo.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 14, 2006. A vote in favor of the concept by South Africa's ruling African National Congress all but assures that a civil union bill for same-gender couples will become law this year. That's despite less than enthusiastic public support, according to a report in the Sunday Independent. There have been several recent marches around the country to protest the pending legislation, led by conservative Christian groups. The ANC has a two-thirds majority in parliament, but has been deeply divided on the issue. It accepted the idea of legal same-gender unions during a National Executive Committee meeting this week, but only after heated debate and resistance from some of its leaders. According to The Independent, participants were reminded that the ANC has always fought for human rights and equality for all people. The civil union bill has been proposed in response to South Africa's constitutional court ruling last December that the country, whose 1994 constitution forbids sexual orientation discrimination, must grant same-gender couples all the rights of marriage by December 1st of this year. It remains to be seen if the civil union legislation, approved by President Thabo Mbeki's cabinet in August, will satisfy the constitutional court ruling.
Danish lesbians and single women will have the same access to publicly funded fertility treatment as heterosexually married women, effective on January 1st. Activists fought a 9-year battle to change the assisted conception laws. More than 3,000 same-gender couples have united under Denmark's groundbreaking 1989 registered partnership law. They have all the rights of marriage except access to adoption.
By a vote of 105 to 83, Finland's parliament this week joined Denmark in approving a government bill to allow single women and lesbian couples access to fertility treatment. It's also been a contentious issue in Finland for several years, and Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee had endorsed a more restrictive version, limiting treatment to heterosexual couples. Police barricades separated demonstrators both for and against the bill in front of the House of Parliament. Those representing conservative Christian groups prayed and defended a child's right to have a father. The other side, bedecked with rainbow-colored banners, emphasized human rights and the importance of love in a child's life. The bill still requires the approval of the Finnish Parliament's Grand Committee, which is considered likely to come soon.
But Sweden is preparing to deport a gay Iranian who had sought asylum. Citing a report from the Foreign Ministry, a Swedish immigration court ruled in late September that most Iranian gays are not persecuted if they live discreet and withdrawn lives. The man claimed he had been assaulted in Iran and jailed because of his sexual orientation and that he was also raped at a police station. Sören Andersson, head of the Swedish National Queer Advocacy Group RFSL, told The Local, a Stockholm English language publication, that he fears the man may be executed after he's forced back to Iran. Some human rights activists believe they have enough evidence to assert that Iran enforces its death penalty for male anal sex, but Human Rights Watch and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission have expressed skepticism. The Iranian exile gay group Homan claims that 4,000 homosexuals have been executed since the 1979 Islamic Revolution there. According to Peter Tatchell of the British group Outrage, Homan based the figure on Iranian media reports of LGBT executions and personal reports from people who had gay friends executed or arrested at private parties who were never seen again and were presumed executed. So the idea of 4,000 executions does not seem wildly off the mark. All sides in the activist debate agree that Iran tortures, harasses, and mistreats its LGBT population.
Amnesty International has appealed to Philippines lawmakers to pass pending legislation that prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Michael Heflin, director of Amnesty International USA's Out Front program, said that adoption of this law is very significant for the entire region because only one other Asian country, Fiji, currently prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. The legislation would ban anti-LGBT bias in public services, public accommodations, the military, employment, education, and health care.
But while Fiji's 1998 constitution forbids discrimination based on sexual orientation, conservative religious groups have been agitating for repeal of the protections. Political support for the LGBT community may not be solid. Some legislators have said recently that they were surprised to learn the constitution protects gays and lesbians and that they would not knowingly have supported such safeguards.
A decision by the Indonesian government to allow semi-autonomous regional power has led to the persecution and victimization of LGBT people by local authorities, according to a report in the Jakarta Post. Indonesia has the largest Muslim population in the world, and local governments have been granted the right to use Islamic law, or Sharia. Several have passed laws making homosexuality illegal. One regional law outlawing prostitution includes homosexuality in the definition of that offense. Indonesian LGBT rights group Aris Pelangi has appealed to the Federal Ministry of Justice and Human Rights to force the regions to comply with national law, which bans sexual orientation discrimination. But a federal government spokesperson said that where Sharia is invoked, it has little control and prefers not to be seen as interfering in local governance for fear of appearing to subvert the new local autonomy.
However, Northern Cyprus is set to decriminalize homosexuality, bringing it in line with European Union laws and human rights in the rest of the country, according to a report this week in the British-based Pink News. Current laws in the Turkish Cypriot-controlled part of the country, remaining from the era of British colonial rule, punish homosexuality with up to 14 years in prison as a crime against nature. But nationally known psychologist Mehmet Kakisi told the Cyprus Mail that we need this change in order to transform ourselves into a modern society. The right of a person to express his or her sexuality is a fundamental human right. The proposal comes as Turkey seeks membership in the European Union. However, Northern Cyprus isn't covered by EU law because of disputes over who owns it. It's generally known as the Turkish Republic of Cyprus.
A United Nations group has criticized the West African country of Cameroon for jailing 11 men on the basis of their presumed sexual orientation. The men were arrested at a bar frequented by gays and lesbians in the capital of Yaoundé in June 2005 and sentenced to 10 months imprisonment after being found guilty of sodomy. The United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention declared those actions to be contrary to the country's obligations to protect people from discrimination under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. The ruling came in response to a complaint on behalf of the men brought by the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission and the International Commission of Jurists. The men were detained for more than a year based on anti-homosexuality offenses in Cameroon's penal code. One of them died of AIDS-related complications shortly after his conviction, exacerbated by the harsh conditions of detention. It marks only the second time that this particular UN human rights body has publicly issued an opinion denouncing detentions based on laws against homosexuality. It's been hailed by Alternatives Cameroon, another group that's been working internationally and locally on behalf of the men since their arrest. Spokesperson Joel Gustave Nana expressed the hope that perhaps the working group's decision will help stop other people from being arrested and possibly dying simply because of their sexual orientation. There are other cases in Cameroon that the groups would like to have overturned. According to media reports, at least four other men are still behind bars at Kandengui Central Prison because of their homosexuality, some without formal charge or trial. And four women were convicted of sodomy in June of this year and sentenced to 3 years probation, but threatened with 6 months in prison if they continue their lesbianism.
But finally, an LGBT advocacy group in the southern African nation of Mozambique appears to be in the birthing stages. According to a local press report, that was one of the outcomes of the first ever seminar on LGBT rights held in the country this week, organized by the Human Rights League, or LDH. The proposed LGBT rights group as yet has no name. Some activists want to affirm their lesbi-gay identity with a name such as the Mozambican Gay and Lesbian Movement, but others prefer the more cautious Organization Against Sexual Discrimination. Among other recommendations coming out of the two-day seminar were a call to include information on sexuality in the school syllabus and to have books on the subject available in bookshops and libraries. The seminar also criticized censorship of lesbi-gay issues in the media, although it was generally agreed that local television coverage of the first day of the seminar had been positive. However, an attempt to debate gay and lesbian rights during a phone-in program on Radio Mozambique was squelched by station management. All civil society associations in Mozambique must register with the Ministry of Justice. Closing the meeting, the chairperson of the LDH, Alice Moboda, admitted that it had been difficult for her to take up the issue, but that the role of the League is to promote human rights. She promised to assist in the registration if necessary. Moboda addressed the notion that homosexuality is against African culture, noting that, when we raised the question of domestic violence, we were told to drop the issue because it was part of African culture. We were told that men display their love for their wives by beating them. Now, she says, everybody rejects domestic violence. So in some years, we will overcome discrimination against homosexuals, too.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 14th, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Don Lupo.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
In late-breaking news, the first openly gay person elected to the U.S. Congress, former Massachusetts Representative Gary Studs, died October 14th at the age of 69. His staunchly Republican Cape Cod area district sent the Democrat Studs to Washington in 1973. His 24-year career was distinguished by his work to protect the coastal environment and his role in uncovering the Reagan administration's clandestine support of the right-wing Nicaraguan Contras. Studs was forced out of the closet in 1983 when a former congressional page revealed the consensual relationship they had had 10 years earlier. Despite a House censure, Studs remained unapologetic. Re-elected to five subsequent terms, Studs became a champion of AIDS funding, lesbian and gay military service members, and same-gender marriage. Washington seemed to have mostly forgotten Studs since his retirement in 1997 until just 2 weeks before his death. Anxious to deflect some of the negative attention from the scandal involving former Representative Mark Foley's online sexual advances to congressional pages, several House Republicans have resurrected the 23-year-old Studs story as an indication of the Democrats' hypocrisy. Studs is survived by his husband Dean Hara, whom he married in 2004 in Massachusetts, a brother, sister, and sister-in-law, four nephews, and an English Springer Spaniel. You'll hear a Rainbow Minute on the queer version of U.S. flagmaker Betsy Ross and get the inside scoop on the controversial sexy sensation heading for movie theaters in the U.S., Europe, and Australia. But first, This Way Out correspondent Janet Mason guides us out of an often all too prosaic world into more lyrical climes.
Poet, visionary, and human liberationist C.A. Conrad brings us a new and necessary queer aesthetic in his collection of poetry, Deviant Propulsion, published in 2006 by Soft Skull Press. This aesthetic is not one of grasping assimilation and is also not one of rebelling against this in predictable ways. What C.A. Conrad wishes for us is to be more free, to have more conversations with ourselves, to observe life so keenly that new vision is rearranging the molecules. In the last stanza of Subterrestrial Aria for Kevin Killian and Dodie Bellamy, First Watch, Conrad writes, "Imagine tasting wind through field of wheat in bread." Leafing through the book, letting the words filter in slowly, the shapes of the sounds, in his visual wordplay, I find myself falling into some ancient poetic place, tracing the cave paintings with my eyes and sifting through the fragments of a civilization in ruin, to find the torn pieces of happiness, some of which are entire poems. Some mornings your hair is exactly the way you want it when you wake up, and you don't shower to not mess it, and you want the trees of Philadelphia to smell exactly who you are, sweat and semen of your lover. My God, it's beautiful out here. It feels good until it feels superficial, and then you feel guilty, and if you are lucky, you stop. Understand guilt as someone else's idea, and you get the love again. In Conrad's world, filled with the blood and grit of the world that we all live in, the birth of happiness begins with the birth of language. Consider this. In the black forest, before the birth of Rilke, under her skirts of bark the hidden pencils grow. Even as Conrad brings us a new queer aesthetic, he smashes the walls of every form of categorization, writing, as he does, "Carry another sex on your sex, in your fellow human streets, look and look, listen, listen, this risen spirit, trying hard to belong to no one. Hail down the want." In a time when so many voices are silenced and when so many others blur together, Conrad rises above the crowd with his vibrato of unique authenticity. Many stake claims on becoming the great American novelist, but Conrad, in his insistence on being himself and pointing out the absurd and then often becoming it, writes in a voice that is rooted in the screaming to be liberated psyche of this country. "Above anything, I value my American roots of dissidence, maintenance of removing control off me, control off me, control of me, commit the muscle to love."
This is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
Gilbert Baker, the creator of the rainbow flag, the omnipresent symbol of gay pride, coming up next on the Rainbow Minute. Gilbert Baker was born in Kansas in 1951, and years later arrived in San Francisco. He came out in the early 70s and met gay activist icon Harvey Milk, who inspired him to get involved. Baker was known for creating bold and colorful banners for gay protests and events, and Milk convinced Baker to create a flag design for the growing gay movement. As the gay movement was taking shape in 1978, the rainbow flag served as a rallying cry to fight the anti-gay rhetoric of Anita Bryant. Originally designed as an 8-color striped flag by Baker, it was reduced to a 7-striped flag because hot pink was not available for mass production. 1 year later, it lost the color indigo in memory of Harvey Milk's death. Today, the 6-color flag is recognized by the International Congress of Flag Makers as the official gay pride flag. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
A troubled gay male couple, a bored bisexual dominatrix, a sexually frustrated sex therapist. They're just some of the characters who populate the controversial new movie Short Bus. Their various journeys intersect at an exclusive private club where they navigate the complicated back roads of love and lust. This Way Out's Steve Pride hitched a ride on the Short Bus with creator John Cameron Mitchell to talk about cinematic sex, sexuality, and life after Hedwig.
I'm the mistress of Short Bus. It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. Hi-ya! This is where it all happens. Aren't they beautiful? It's just like the 60s, only with less hope. Oh, for a minute I thought that man didn't have an arm.
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, the writer and director and producer of Short Bus. My last film was Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
John, what is Short Bus about?
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone. It's about a group of young people in their 30s in New York, post 9/11, definitely exhausted by Bush, in this strange time where it seems harder to connect, where life seems a bit more powerless than ever before, even though we're supposed to be the most powerful country in the world. It's like this strange numbness that a lot of people feel here and trying to reach out and connect with themselves and with others.
What inspired Short Bus? Where did the ideal come from?
Obviously, there's a lot of ideas in Short Bus, but the idea of using real sex in a film that was emotional and humorous and a real New York story came when I was doing Hedwig and was watching a lot of films out of Europe. I mean, there's dozens of films just this year that have been using real sex and coming from foreign countries mostly. I had seen a lot of these films and I thought it was very fascinating to use that language of sex that we all know a few words of, but most of them were very grim and bleak. And I thought, well, there's more there than just bleakness, and there's more there than just titillation. You know, porn certainly has its place, but I think actually most porn is as formulaic as Hollywood. So I wanted to de-eroticize the sex and see what was left over, like panning for gold. What is left is emotion, ideas, humor, all kinds of revealing things about our lives when you can sort of get the titillation out of the way. Certainly there's some darkness involved, and also some of the funniest things any of us have experienced have to do with sex, too. It's a ridiculous, incongruous act that's irrational and therefore compartmentalized by American society and the powers that be because it's scary. You know, it's more scary than violence, because violence is about gaining power, and sex, you sort of lose power in a way when you're sexually aroused in some people's minds. You know, it's like, it's too scary. Hide it away. You know, the churches tend to hide it away. It's more powerful than God. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's so scary to some people. When we remind ourselves that in our lives, it actually can be integrated in a way that's funny and emotional and complicated. Why not respect sex in films the way you respect it in life, or hopefully you respect it in life?
You know, I really didn't find the sex in your film to be gratuitous or pornographic in any way. Instead, when I left the theater, I had a feeling that I had been cheated by the sexual activities I had seen on screen in A-list films.
I always felt patronized when I see traditional films that when the sex begins, we sort of float away to the clouds or the candle or the sheet. And I feel like I'm being treated like a child. Every other part of our lives is shown in almost to excess, you know, or at least we're given the benefit of the doubt that we can handle it as adults. But I always feel like I'm being treated like a child, condescended to by filmmakers when they just sort of dissolve away and assume that we all know what's going to happen. But as we know, the thing that happens is much more complicated. It almost assumes that all sex is good, which is an odd thing to do, when in fact it's embarrassing, it's funny, it's great, it's sad, it's boring, it's all these things. It has a full range of emotional connections with the rest of our lives. Why not use every paint in the paint box?
Speaking of range, it's really unusual to see a film that covers heterosexual, homosexual, pansexual storylines and sexualities.
Well, I realize if I'm going to go there, I might as well go all the way. And I might as well challenge straight audiences, gay audiences, lesbian, bisexual, to remind us that we're all in the same boat. Certainly in our culture, people try to separate bisexuality. Gay people hide away in a ghetto. Straight people disapprove of gay marriage. Everyone tries to create a separate ghetto to somehow belong and feel less scared. But lately, they just sort of feel like marketing niches. I mean, kids learn about sex from porn rather than through actual life and through actual art. And porn is, I have actually no problem with it as it's a morally neutral thing. I think it can be used very badly and made very badly. It can be really good. This film really isn't porn. I haven't met anyone who's actually been aroused by it, because the plot and the characters are so integrated with the sex that you don't have time to be aroused, you know, I think. You know, you can be aroused by this lamp sitting next to me if you want to. I can't control that. But in our case, our priority is not to, it's a beautiful lamp, isn't it? Our priority is not really to arouse, because I don't believe you should mix titillation with sex when you're examining it in a real serious way. I think porn does that much better. Everyone who's seen the film has told me that by the end, sex is the last thing they remember about it. Almost like at the end of a long relationship. You know, this film is not a one-night stand. It's a relationship, and sex is one of the many things in it. But the things that you remember most are probably the more emotional and the more humorous, and maybe a couple of political comment here or a joke there that might have a sexual connection, but it isn't only about sex. Sex is never only about sex. Sex is connected to every other part of our life, and that's what this film is trying to remind us. People say, well, it's not what I expected, because we in America don't connect sex with emotion and humor. I mean, we do with this double entendres all over the place, but we don't see examples of sex in film where the heart is on the sleeve. And why is that? Because in our lives, we often have sexual connection with emotion. Boredom, embarrassment, humor, love, deep need for connection. Why don't we see that in films? I believe people would be less afraid of sex, there'd be less sexual violence, if people were more relaxed about it, if people were like, oh yeah, it is a part of life. You know, there's this strange belligerence that happens when you don't accept different parts of our lives as necessary, as human things.
What do you want the audience to take away from the film?
I want people to feel a little more mercy for each other. I want there to be an understanding that we're all in the same boat. We're all lonely. We're all reaching out to connect with human beings. I mean, the feeling of the blackout in New York 2 years after 9/11 was the feeling that I want people to take away from this film, is that once everything stopped, lights went off, we first thought we were dead. We thought it was the terrorists. Then we realized we just overdid it. We just had our phones and internet and air conditioners. They were just overloaded the system. And all of those phones and emails and things are really tools by which we try to connect, but they often separate us. So when everything stopped, people started meeting each other in their buildings they had never met before and had parties on the stairs. There were bonfires in the park. There was a marching band that went by that ended up in my film. We suddenly couldn't recognize our own, the streets where we lived. And that was a good thing because you looked people in the eye and there was no violence that night and it was a beautiful thing. And that's the feeling I want people to take away from this film.
What are your thoughts on mainstream gay culture?
I get really frustrated with mainstream gay culture. I think it's a marketing niche now. Growing up, you know, as a sexual minority, gender or sexuality-wise, you're given a privilege. You're given a way of looking at the world from a different point of view, and you can abuse it or you can use it well. And so many people just use it to try to be like everyone else. And I think that gay culture is more conformist. They're more into having the same body, the same music, the same movies, living in the same neighborhoods, the same hairstyles, the same way of having sex. It's so formulaic. It's so depressing to me. And the fact that young people are not being safe anymore, not respecting each other. I guess I'm old-fashioned. You know, I really do believe that sex and love and all of these things are privileges that we have. And it's like, I'm very sex positive, but I'm not like, you know, I think crystal meth is a scourge and it preys on people who have low self-esteem. It makes them feel strong and sexy, but they end up treating people badly. I mean, internet sex, people are really rude to each other online. By separating sex away from the other parts of our lives, we enjoy it less. And to me, it's like, don't separate yourselves into labels. I mean, we all have a little bit of bisexuality. None of us are just tops or bottoms or bears or twinks. Why do we have to keep saying what we are and what we want when every year of our lives we find out more of who we are and what we want? Why limit yourselves now? Spread it out, loosen it up a little bit, listen to some music you've never heard. Watch some straight sex if you're gay. If you're straight, watch some gay sex. We're all in the same boat.
This has been a conversation with John, Cameron Mitchell. You can find more information on Short Bus at shortbusthemovie.com or prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. Suddenly I'm this punk rock star of stage and screen, and I'll never turn it back.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Don Lupo, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KZYXNZ, Philo, Willits, and Ukiah, California, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, CKLU, Sudbury, Ontario, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.